Atari has bought the brand and assets of its biggest rival, ending the longest console war in history. Plus, IGN has bought more beloved media properties and let go of their editors. Tonight is May 26th, 2024, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Breakman wants me to get on with it because he wants to go back to playing Little Kitty Big City. I've played that game. That's a good reason to go back to it. Hello, everybody, and welcome to I'm Not a Kitty or in a Big City. Another edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. We'll be doing a little bit of that tonight. My name is Bobby Blackwell. For joining us live here on this Sunday night, instead of playing Little Kitty Big City like Breakman, thank you so much. We do tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. So come join us, interact with the show directly. But we are a podcast, and you can interact with us throughout the week. Suggest topics or talk about topics that maybe we do, maybe we don't cover on the show this week. You can do that on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord. I know you probably already have either 80 million Discords or zero, and you have no interest, and I totally get it. That's totally fine as well. It's a very low traffic server. We don't let people ping you and all that stuff. I want to actually, you know, jump in on this because I it's actually a game I've played recently. And rolled credits on recently. So there you go. Breakman's mind is blown that Bobby Blackwolf actually beat a game recently. But Little Kitty Big City, I think I played it last week because it was on Game Pass. And it's I was able to play it through Game Pass. And I thought at first, Little Kitty, Big City, which has no Bobby Blackwolf mode, Pod Culture's ass. There's no, like, super easy mode. There's no difficulty in it. I thought it was going to be more like Untitled Goose Game, and it's really not. And it's cute. I will say that it's going to be a great speedrun game for the people that want to speedrun it. I can see that there's going to be a lot of amazing, wild things that are going to be done in the speedrun because it's actually a very, very short game. I think, like, if you do all the content, it's like 6 hours. And even then, I only played it for 2 hours and rolled credits because I was like, I really don't care about doing that side quest or that side quest or that side quest. It's like, essentially, it's a heartbreaking story. You're a kitty and you're sleeping in the window and you roll over like you do when you're sleeping, big roll, and you roll out the window. And this person lives in a high rise. So already, like, I'm traumatized in this game. So I'm telling you, you know how the game traumatizes you, but you actually get caught by a crow. And so you make it down safely, from this very high skyscraper that you live on. And your object is to get back up to your bed. That's it. So, and you don't have to do all the side quests. You don't have to do everything. Apparently, a Breakman had to start over because he's trying to, you know, to be completionist, do the 100%, get your platinum or your all the achievements, whatever you're playing on. He said he almost had to beat when he found a game-ending bug. That sucks. That's a shame. But it was cute. I enjoyed it. I'm glad I got it on Game Pass. So Game Pass, once again, I still think is one of the best things in gaming. It was cute, but it's not Untitled Goose Game. It is more, you have to climb back up and you need energy to climb back up to home. And so you're getting enough energy to climb back up to home. Breakman says it is buggy. That's going to make the speed run, the eventual speed run, that much more hilarious with how buggy it is. So it's cute. It is. It's on Game Pass. It's a very small download. So those of you with data caps, it's going to be just fine for you. Little Kitty Big City. Say that 10 times fast and not have to use the button, because it's very easy to want to do that. Also, I do want to mention just at the top of the show that there is no Orange Lounge Radio tonight. Rob is out in Chicago. He's been telling people he's going to be out in Chicago, so I feel safe in saying that. He's going to be out in Chicago, or he is out in Chicago. He won and lost what he was out there to do, both at the same time. So if you're from Chicago, you will understand this. If you're not from Chicago, you're not going to understand this. But whatever he was, he won. And then they celebrated with a shot of Malort. So he both won and lost at the exact same time. It's quite remarkable feat that happened out there. So let's get into actually, first I'll say this. E3VL asked, did not play Hellblade 2 on Game Pass? No, I did not. Not my kind of game. I watched a little bit of it, some other people playing it, and I'm like, okay, it looks pretty. But I did not play it. So let's talk about, this is the big thing. I know everybody probably wanted me to talk about this when this happened. So I'm going to talk about it, because we've been, this show has been part of the controversy about this, because thanks to being in a, I think this one was the H-Bomber Guy video. I've been in an H-Bomber Guy and a Carl Jobes video, so I'm trying to remember which YouTube documentarian included me on this one, and I think this was the H-Bomber Guy used stuff about from this show, about the person who was the head of this. And it's kind of interesting what's going to actually going on here, and what a lot of people believe versus what's actually happening. So I'm talking about Atari finally winning the world's first console war. Atari, which is, this is from a press release from Atari. They claim they are one of the world's most iconic consumer brands and interactive entertainment producers. Maybe in the 80s they were, but, they're trying to be that again. Announced that it has purchased the Intellivision brand and certain games from Intellivision Entertainment, LLC. Intellivision Entertainment, LLC will rebrand and continue its business of developing and distributing the Amico brand game console with a license from Atari to continue to distribute new versions of the Intellivision games on the Amico console. Atari will seek to expand digital and physical distribution of legacy Intellivision games, potentially create new games, and explore brand and licensing opportunities as part of a long-term plan to create value from the Intellivision properties. Mike Mika, who is the head of Digital Eclipse, which Atari purchased last year, quote, uniting Atari and Intellivision after 45 years ends the longest running console war in history, unquote. Let's see here. And then it continues, if you don't know this console war history. The first Intellivision home video game console was released by Mattel Electronics in 1979, and the console platform sold an estimated 5 million units through 1990. Atari and Intellivision arguably fought the first console war of consequence in the late 1970s and the early 1980s. Mattel went as far as enlisting the actor George Plimpton to appear in a series of ads comparing the two systems, as well as an 8-minute-long video shown at the Gamescom trade show. Wade Rosen, the chairman and CEO of Atari, said, quote, "This was a very rare opportunity to unite former competitors and bring together fans of Atari, Intellivision, and the golden age of gaming," unquote. So, the purchase includes the rights to more than 200 titles from the Intellivision portfolio and the Intellivision trademarks. And Phil Adam, who is the current CEO of Intellivision Entertainment, says, quote, "Atari has been a valuable partner, and we have every confidence that they will be a responsible steward of the storied Intellivision brand. We look forward to our expanded collaboration and the prospect of bringing a broad array of new titles to the Amico family gaming platform," unquote. So, Pod Culture says, next from Atari, the Amico 2600. And that is where a lot of people on the internet got this whole deal wrong. Because that's not what they bought. And they kind of like sneak it in there, and they kind of work it in there because everybody's like, oh, Atari bought Intellivision, the company's dead. No, that's actually not what happened. Atari bought the Intellivision brand, and they bought more than 200 titles from the Intellivision portfolio, but not all of them. What Atari did not buy was the Amico and any of the games that were currently being developed for the Amico. So, what I believe has happened here is that in order to get the Amico funded and created, they needed, the Intellivision company needed to sell. And the most valuable thing it had was its name and the original titles from the 80s, those 200-something titles that they owned the rights to from the 80s. Titles like Astro Smash, Shark Shark, Thin Ice, things like that. And so that is the only thing they had to sell to get the money to make the Amico. And what they actually say in here is that the current company that is Intellivision Entertainment LLC, which is still owned by Tommy Tallarico, the reason that I'm in all these videos about Tommy Tallarico, is that it's going to just rename itself. So they're no longer going to call them Intellivision. They're going to call them Amico or some variation of Amico, and they're going to put out the Amico console. It's no longer going to be the Intellivision Amico. It's going to be the Amico, and Atari has said that it will license the Atari titles for the Amico. But I don't think that Atari has bought, like, Earthworm Jim or Finnegan Fox or the Cornhole license or any of those new properties that they were making for the Amico that Intellivision technically owned. I don't believe Atari got those. Atari only got the classic catalog. This is probably the very last gasp of the Amico. I thought we already saw the last gasp. I did pay $50 for a Founders Edition. I'm never going to see that $50. I'm never going to see anything for it. I'm never getting that $50 back. But it sounds like what they're trying to do is they're trying to put out the product because the Amico exists. But what happened is, you know, they tried to launch in 2020. I'm guessing they made a very bad deal with their chip manufacturer that was going to help them mass produce the things they needed. And so the chip manufacturer ran away with all their money and they had no contractual recourse to get that money back. And so they ran out. They lost all the money that they had spent because, oh, shipping delays, China, all that stuff. And nobody could have predicted that we would have been in a pandemic that hampered all those shipping stuff and the workforce, everything going on in 2020. I do believe that if the pandemic didn't happen, the Intellivision Amico would have come out on October 10th, 2020, and probably underwhelmed. It would have been very underwhelming, and Atari would probably still be buying Intellivision today. But the Amico would have come out and flopped by now. So, this is the last gasp to get the Amico out. Is just not going to have the Intellivision branding because, to casuals, Intellivision isn't. It's a calculated risk because Intellivision is not the name recognition with casual gamers like Atari is, and so calling it the Intellivision Amico is not going to gain anything more than it would just be calling the Amico. So you're probably wondering about Tommy Tallarico because and I actually interviewed him in early 2020, right after the pandemic, when people were willing to do remote interviews on Sunday nights because they didn't have to go to work the next morning. And I actually even put the video up on YouTube, and we have now pulled it from YouTube because it was attracting the wrong crowd and stuff like that. So I've known Tommy for over 20 years. I first met him when I was working with G4, the television network, before they bought Tech TV. So I'm not talking Tech TV. I'm talking like pre-Tech TV. Tech TV was a standalone thing. And so, like, I actually know him from, you know, from other places that aren't as much in the public eye. And he's finally taken the advice that a lot of people have given him. And Tommy's retreated from everywhere. He is now a very private person. I don't see him in those spaces that I used to see him, you know, where he was, you know, it was still kind of like, and it was not his inner circle, but it was like I was in the circle because I've known him for so long. And he's not there anymore. He's not participating there. What happened with Tommy and why he had to step down as CEO of Furman Television? And a lot of people don't believe this is true, but it actually is true. His dad was in hospice and kept living. And what they do when you're in a hospice facility and you don't, unfortunately, you know, if you don't pass from natural causes, is they kick you out of the hospice facility and say you have to do home hospice. So now you've got to have all those IVs and all the equipment to keep the person comfortable in a hospice situation, but you have to do it at home. And Tommy had to do that for his father because his father kept staying alive even though he had a terminal condition. And so that was wearing on Tommy while he, you know, was not in a good mental state with the gaming public, because here's the thing. Tommy really needed a PR department for himself, and he was too proud because he grew up in the streets of New York. So he figured he could go toe-to-toe with the internet, and he couldn't. You can't go toe-to-toe with the internet. I'm sorry. Like I don't care where you grew up, what streets you grew up on. You can't go toe to toe with the internet. And so he felt that because he struck gold with Video Games Live, because everybody told him, this is stupid. This is dumb. Nobody's going to care. You're not going to, who's going to go to watch a symphony play video game music? And turns out he was right. People will go watch it. And now there's touring video game symphonies going on all around the world at all times. You know, Square Enix has theirs, but the Sonic Symphony that plays Sega games, they're touring. There's been tours for Monster Hunter, for Capcom games, for, you know, orchestral concerts. And that all stemmed from Video Games Live. So Tommy figured, I did it in Video Games Live. Everybody told me I couldn't do it, and I did it, and I started this revolution. He figured he could do it a second time, and he couldn't. He had all of that, and he was trying to defend himself against the internet, and the internet doesn't play fair, and he's trying to play fair, or New York fair, as I would probably say it. And that was weighing on his mental state, along with the stress from his father and having to basically be a home caretaker and doing hospice, home hospice for his dad, which is why he had to step away. And I think that finally he's kind of understood that, you know, your time in the public eye is over. Tommy is apparently still on the board of Intellivision because he's the one who put up the money for it. But the company did not sell. That is the thing that a lot of people are like, well, Tommy got his golden parachute and all that stuff. No, Intellivision didn't sell the company. They're just going to change their name to Amico or something that's reminiscent of Amico. They just sold the Intellivision name and the Intellivision library, which is what Tommy Tallarico bought from Keith Robinson, one of the former head programmers of the Blue Sky Rangers, Keith Robinson's estate, when Keith Robinson passed away. So Tommy bought the brand and the games, created this company, Intellivision Entertainment LLC, to make the Amico console, and then, which right now is an Android device. Like, it's not even an actual physical console right now, but you can play it right now. And I wouldn't. Don't do it. But then he had this company, and now the parts of the company that he purchased from Keith Robinson are now at Atari, and anything he didn't purchase from Keith Robinson is still a part of the company, and they're going to rebrand and try to keep going that way. That's what's actually going on here. And this is the last gasp. I thought we already saw the last gasp, but this is the last gasp for the Amico. I'm never going to see the Amico because they're not going to send it to me. They're not going to give me my money back, which is fine. Like, I'm thankful and fortunate enough to be in a place that, yes, that $50 is gone and I'm never going to get it back. And it's okay. Like, for me, it's okay. For a lot of other people, it's not. And I understand that, and that's very valid. And, you know, so there are people still fighting to get their $50 back. Maybe now they'll be able to get it back because, hey, Intel, the company now is flush with cash from selling their brand to their biggest competitor. What this does mean, though, is that, I mean, Digital Eclipse is currently owned by Atari. And this means that, you know, now Digital Eclipse can take over and preserve and make more Intellivision compilations. And I believe that they would be able to do a good job. And honestly, like, the idea, the thought of possibly having a Gold Master series on the Blue Sky Rangers, which is the name of the programming team that built many of the Intellivision games. I would love to have that. I would love to have a Gold Master series looking at the early Intellivision. The problem is a lot of the Blue Sky Rangers, unfortunately, no longer with us. Keith Robinson was really the public face of the Blue Sky Rangers. I got to meet him when I was at All Games. In fact, you know, helped interview him. Scott Rubin actually did the interviews with Keith. He wouldn't really let me interview Keith, but I did get to meet Keith. He was a wonderful person, wonderful human being, and gave great interviews. But he's no longer with us. But maybe we could get some other things and maybe get some archived interviews, because Keith did give a lot of interviews on video as well. And, you know, that would be amazing to kind of look at, have the Gold Master Series style, like the making of Karateka and Llama Soft, the Jeff Minter story, something like that, or Atari 50, if you've played that, something like that to kind of preserve the Intellivision culture. Yeah, and Questbuster even says there's a ton of stories that can be told about these games, and Tiger Claw says they can remix those games too. And there's been remixes. Like, that was the point of the Amico, was remixing a lot of these games, which is why part of this deal from Atari is that Atari is going to license back to the Amico those things that they were working on, because Atari bought those remixes, and now Atari has them, but they're still going to put them on the Amico if the Amico comes out. Which it might not, but Atari is committed to doing it if the Amico comes out. Atari's probably like, the Amico's not coming out, so it's no big deal. I'm excited for actually, like, Intellivision, actually, there's going to be something, like, concrete. Because one thing Atari, the current Atari, zombie Atari, whatever you want to call it, because the Atari of today is not the Atari of the 2000s that did flashbacks, and it's not the Atari of the 90s that did, like, Driver 3, and it's not the Atari of the 80s that was Nolan Bushnell and any of them. So, like, it's like, this is like the fifth iteration of Atari or something like that. But this iteration of Atari is actually really good about preserving its legacy and actually documenting its legacy in a form that I appreciate. And so I'm totally fine with the Intellivision library coming to Atari, and I think they're going to do a lot of great things with it. We're never going to see the Amico, but Atari did not buy the Amico. So that's the part I really want people to understand. If you only understand one thing from what I said, Atari did not buy the Amico. Atari bought everything else and said, nope, Amico, you're on your own. Tiger asks, do you think the new Earthworm Jim game will ever come out? It's supposed to be on the Amico. So that's probably one of the things Atari didn't buy, was Earthworm Jim. And I heard something. See, now, unfortunately, we're getting into, like, rumors and speculation. I heard that they never actually had the rights to Earthworm Jim. Like, Tommy had all the original people working on it and stuff. But turns out they might not actually have the rights for Earthworm Jim. I don't know who owns the rights to Earthworm Jim, but from what I understand, it wasn't Intellivision. and it wasn't Tommy Tallarico. Breakman says, Amico, vaporware of the 21st century. And what kills me about the Amico is that it exists. Like, production units exist. Not many of them, because they have to build them by hand. And a lot of them have different components because it's whatever they can get to put in it. But it exists. It's just they can't mass produce them because the chip manufacturer in 2020 ran away with all their money and didn't actually produce the chips and blamed the pandemic and said, oops, sorry. And whatever bad legal agreement they made, they couldn't recoup that cash from them. And so they're just out that money. That money's just gone. Let's talk about another thing that happened. More things getting bought. So a lot more consolidation in the industry. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because, like, I look at the Atari and Intellivision thing and I go back to a topic I try not to talk about much on here because I don't really watch it anymore, but wrestling, professional wrestling. The Atari and Intellivision thing really feels like that day in 2001 when the WWE bought WCW, and then it's like, and I'm going to put it on the shelf. Like, I just bought my biggest company. And it kind of feels a little bit like that, where, like, Atari buys Intellivision, and they're going to just, you know. But Atari won't put them on the shelf. They'll put them on a prominent shelf, but it'll still be on a shelf. And like, the son bought the Amico to try, I don't know. But a lot of media properties got consolidated as well. So, Game Developer reports that the UK-based gamer network of game journalism, sites like Eurogamer and GamesIndustry.biz, have been acquired by IGN Entertainment. For an undisclosed sum, IGN purchased the entire family of websites, which further includes Rock Paper Shotgun, VG247, and Dicebreaker. Previously, the Ziff Davis subsidiary purchased How Long to Beat and Humble Bundle. The UK events like EGX and MCM were not included in the sale. Similarly, the entertainment site Popverse will remain with ReadPop. So if you remember, back in like 2018, I believe, ReadPop, which is a convention company, they do PAX. And they do a couple other conventions as well. But PAX is the one that we all kind of know them. There's like some like anime cons or comic cons that they do. They decided they were going to buy media websites. And so they bought the Gamer Network, which was had the sites like Eurogamer and the ones that I listed, Rock, Paper, Shotgun and stuff. And so a convention organizer own these media websites. Well, now they've sold those media websites to IGN. Alongside the acquisition, IGN laid off several employees within the Gamer Network. These cuts appear to be editorial focused, as Games Industry's managing editor Brendan Sinclair and Rock Paper Shotgun's deputy editor Alice Bell have both been let go. Sinclair wrote, quote, I've been laid off and need a new job. Maybe games journalism, maybe something else in games, maybe not games at all. Entertaining all possibilities at this point, unquote. And Alice Bell wrote, quote, guess who has two thumbs and is being made redundant following my company getting new owners, unquote. So it is unclear how many more people have been let go, but it established redundancies is what, and actually, like, if that was from Game Developer, which is not owned by them, but GamesIndustry.biz actually had, which is one of the sites bought, actually announced the sale as well and was like, and it created multiple redundancies throughout the IGN Entertainment Network. A lot of these sites are the ones, like, you'll see, like, I have a little ticker crawl at the bottom of the screen. And he actually wind up seeing, like, it just turns out that a lot of them are from this gamer network. Because, like, Eurogamer is actually on the screen right now, so I've got a little ticker at the bottom. And they've got some good people there, but a lot of those good people have been made redundant because they've also got good people elsewhere. And I know you're going to probably make fun of, like, oh, it's IGN, they suck. Have you read some of IGN's stuff lately that's not a guide? They've done some pretty in-depth stuff with their current staff. Like, IGN is not just clickbait anymore. It was in the past, which is why we all believe it's clickbait today. But they've actually done some pretty good work. Not, you know, it's not the whole site. I mean, it's still mostly guides and SEO and things like that. But IGN's got some talent right now. And unfortunately, when you have this many websites, you don't need all of that talent when you can consolidate, which is probably what's going to happen. So you're probably wondering, well, why did they buy them? Why did they buy these sites if they're just going to lay people off and they're going to lay off all the people that made the site what was great about it? And what they're buying is the back catalog. And, you know, they're buying that cachet. And they're buying that, and they're going to kind of ride that wave because now their properties got bigger. Tackle says IGN reviews are hit or miss. It's kind of interesting because I'll like usually like watch an IGN review of a game. And just about every single time, the comments are like, wow, I didn't know IGN could review a game this fairly. Wow, I didn't expect IGN to like this. They usually hate everything like this. Wow, IGN, blah, 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 blah. Every single time. It's like, at some point, you need to realize that maybe IGN's reviews aren't as bad as you think they are. Because if every single time you're surprised that they're not as bad as you think you are, maybe the problem's you and not someone else. And not IGN's. So these sites aren't going away. They did get rid of their managing editors and stuff, probably because they're going to instill their own people as managing editors. And a lot of times there's a lot of freelance work anyway. Like the people that are writing on these sites aren't full-time contractors to that site. There, a lot of them are freelance, so they're just going to, you know, it would just be a different place to freelance to. But it does kind of mean something that, you know, we are also consolidating the media because now, you know, as much as we don't want to admit it, yes, if there is something that people want to, the company wants to get across, they now have a lot more avenues to get it across, which is why ReadPop bought the sites in the first place was so they could promote their shows and their conventions on a lot of trusted news sites. And, you know, have the good coverage and stuff. And so it obviously was diminishing returns for ReadPop, so they got rid of it. They're going to try to do something else, and that's why they got rid of all their media websites, and they're going to concentrate on PAX and their other conventions. E3VL says, people should read or watch the review blind, free themselves from bias. So this actually ties into something else that I saw. And there's discourse going on in social media on the bad site. And I had to look at this. But there is a website that has come up with this huge like spreadsheet of categories and numbers. And the idea is that it is to free yourself from bias. It is to take the subjectivity out of your review. And it is, we have these objective metrics and you put in the numbers and that is how you get the grade. And it is purely objective. There is it's not intended to have any subjectivity. And because they recently reviewed Hellblade 2 and released their scoring sheet, which is like this numbers of like, there's like seven categories and they break down everything in the game. And they're like, this is objective. This tells you what the game is because to them, we all believe games are art, but games are also a product. And does the product do the thing it needs to do? That is what an objective review would say. Questbuster says, best anyone can do is digest what is presented in a review and hopefully decide for yourself whatever the points raised hit close to your interest or not. I saw that chart and I was hoping it was satire. Apparently it is not. No, they are very, they're very, very serious about it. And they even say, wow, it's kind of interesting that traditional game journalists hate this, but gamers love it. And, you know, I don't know how to feel about it yet, but I actually went through this chart. And I took my favorite game of all time, and I scored it on this chart. My favorite game of all time is Katamari Damacy. And I went through this just to see objectively how it would score. And what they have categories. So, like, category A is game mechanics, and out of you basically have to score it as a possible out of a possible 10 points. And it's stuff like control systems, level design, AI and NPC interactions, progression and skill systems, inventory and resource management, physics and environmental interaction, challenge and difficulty balancing, gameplay variety and flexibility, puzzle design, and combat system. And you score those. Those are 10 categories, and you score them out of 10. And you get an actual score, you basically out of 100. And if there is no progression and skill system in the game, well, that's a 0 out of 10. If there is no inventory or resource management, that is a 0 out of 10 for that category. So, and basically what they say is that if it scores 54 or below, it is considered a disaster. So, like, I went through just that, and I'm like, game mechanics, just for Katamari Damacy, the original Katamari Damacy. And it's like control systems. I mean, it's, you know, tank controls, kind of wonky, you know, doesn't always respond as well when you actually, like, look at, like, Mel's saying. So I'd say probably, you know, a 5 out of 10. Level design, actually, let me write stuff down just so I can keep track, because I want to see, because I haven't actually done this. I've only thought about doing it. So I'm going to do control systems. It's a 5 out of 10. Boom, 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 5. Level design, I mean, it's because of what it's trying to do, it kind of gets the scaling pretty well. So I will say, you know, an 8 out of 10. So for that, AI and NPC interactions, you can interact some with the other cousins in the game, but it's very, very limited. And you interact with the other NPCs by rolling them up. And so there's really no, the AI and NPC interactions, not very good. So I'm going to say 2 out of 10 for that. Progression and skill systems, there is no progression or skill system, so that's a 0. Inventory and resource management, once again, that's not there, so that's a 0. Physics and environmental interactions. So this is kind of the big hallmark of Katamari Damacy. And so the physics aren't the most realistic, but the whole point of interacting with the environment, that's kind of the main focus of it. And so that's pretty good. So I'll give it a 9 out of 10 because it's not the most realistic of physics. Challenge and difficulty balancing. So it's not that challenging, and there's no difficulty setting or anything like that. It's just, you know, how big can you get? So they don't really try to balance anything, but, you know, I mean, it's got some challenge, and it does ramp you up a little bit. So I'll go ahead and give it a 6 out of 10 on that. Let's see here. Puzzle design. Well, let's see here. How many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8. Gameplay variety and flexibility. Gameplay variety and flexibility. There is no gameplay variety in Katamari Damacy. You're rolling up a ball. So, you know, but I mean, there's a couple things, but it's like, it's 3 out of 10. Puzzle design, there aren't puzzles in the game, so that's a 0. And combat system, there's no combat in the game, so that is a 0. So, if I do, let's see here. Now I got to do math in my head, and I'm not going to. I'm actually going to pull up my calculator app, because you know what? I can. Because I want to see how I... So my favorite game of all time, 5 plus 8 plus 2 plus 9 plus 6 plus 3, scored 33 out of 100 in game mechanics, which is rated as a disaster. So objectively, taking any subjective things out of it, in just that one category, and I'm not going to go through all seven categories, in that one category, it got rated a disaster. My favorite game of all time that I would recommend to anybody and everybody to try on this scale is a disaster. Breakman says there's no gameplay variety in Tetris either, and I think Tetris is the only game that comes close to perfection. There you go. And there's no, you know, progression and skill system or anything like that. So they actually continue in story in category B, the story and character development, narrative structure. Well, in Katamari Damacy, the narrative makes no sense. Subjectively, you could say that's part of its charm, but objectively, the narrative structure sucks. And we're looking at it from from that standpoint. Character depth and development, there is none. They're very two-dimensional characters, literally. And so, like, you know, the king called Cosmos, he's an alcoholic, and you're his prince that can never make him happy. Dialogue and script writing, once again, it's in jank English. It's very stilted. One would argue that's the charm of the game, but that's a subjective opinion, and there's no room for subjective opinion here. World building and setting, they do the bare minimum. So that's low. Thematic depth, once again, pretty low. Emotional engagement, pretty low. It's not a very emotionally charged game. Voice acting and performance, there is no voice acting, so that would be a zero. And integration of story and gameplay, I guess they do okay on that. So that I could, you know, because it makes sense what's going on, so you could give that a high marks. But once again, that would be a disaster. Sound and music is where it would actually get really good, because I would say the soundtrack composition, these are out of 25. Soundtrack composition would score very high. Sound effects and ambient sounds, I would actually score, would have to be objectively scored lower for Katamari Damacy, because they don't vary the sounds. Every time you roll up something, they give the exact same sound. So there's no variety. So you're hearing the same sound effects over and over and over again as you roll people up. So that would actually get a low score. The voice acting quality, there's no voice acting in the game, so that would be a zero out of 25. And audio integration and mixing is pretty good, and that's basically what that's like. Can you hear the sound effects over the music? That's a very objective thing, and so they do a good job there, except how the fact that there's no voice acting and the fact that they don't have a variety of sound effects would actually drop it down to probably a, I'm going to say, down to like a 60 or a 65. Which is poor to fair on this scale. So, like, it wouldn't be a disaster. It would be fair in that category. So then there's like graphics and artistic style, which is the funny thing, because it's like visual fidelity. It was not the greatest looking game on the PlayStation 2. Half-Life 2 had already come out. So we had Half-Life 2 graphics at the time that Katamari Damacy came out. And the visual fidelity, it's polygonal. Like, you can literally see the polygons. You can't have that right now. And so there's more lighting and shadows. They didn't really do much of that, so that would be a zero. You know, color palette and textures. Yeah, it's got them. It doesn't have that many textures because it's all polygons, but, you know. Inconsistency in performance, which would fail because there's a lot of, you know, there's frame dips when a lot of things going on at the time. And things like that. I think probably their innovation and creativity, that would actually give more points. But once again, there's like world building and environment. No, there's not much world building. Cross-media integration, there's none of that, is one of the things. Creative use of player interaction, not really. Integration of genres, technology utilization, things like that. So frankly, my favorite game in the world on this system that is going around social media would be rated, because what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to add all these points up. And so it becomes out of 500. So you add up, like I would add the 33 to the whatever I did the next thing. And if it scored less than 224 out of all five categories, it's a disaster. And so my favorite game that I would review, and if I gave a score, it would be a 10 out of 10. It would actually be scored as a disaster. So I would be like, hey, I really, really, really enjoyed this game, but the math doesn't lie. It's a disaster. It's a terrible game. E3 Veil says, seems like most categories are based on open world games. Yeah. Because that's what a good game is. That is the type of product that the consumers are looking for. And so that is what a quality title is. And so this is measuring quality. And if you don't have those things, you don't have a quality title. It is not a masterpiece, which is what the top is. Masterpiece, then outstanding, then excellent, then good, then fair, then poor, then disaster. This is why I say that when people are like, well, there's too much bias in video games, which is how we got on this topic already, is if you remove the bias out of it, you don't get accurate things either. Because completely unbiased, looking at this scale, my favorite game of all time is a disaster and nobody should ever play it. Questmaster says, if Situation X applies to this game, see Section 14D unless it also overlaps with Section A5 through B6, then see Section 5A on Sheet 6B. And actually, what's funny is that this, what I was looking at, I'm actually looking at something that they filled out because they actually did Senua's Saga's Hellblade 2. And if it does, like, and Senua's Saga does not have an inventory and it doesn't have a skill tree. So it literally got 0 out of 10 for those two categories, which knocked its gameplay mechanics. Everything else was a 7 or 8 or 9 or 10, but it knocked it down to 77 out of 100, which meant it was rated good. Now, everything it did, apparently in their objective system, did really well. It just didn't have two of the things which knocked it down to a good from a masterpiece. It got masterpiece in a couple other categories, and it got excellent in category E as well, but that, at least in that, they had all of the stuff filled out. So it's in its outstanding game, but it's not a masterpiece because it didn't do everything that they expected a quality masterpiece game to have. The Breakman says there should be a way to remove categories that aren't relevant to the game. I mean, this could be evolving. Like, this is not obviously not going to be the final thing. What I find interesting here is that there's all these, like, you know, metrics, and none of them are about accessibility. None of them. Like, you can quantify and very objectively talk about what the accessibility settings. Does it have the ability to change the color of the subtitles? Does it have the ability to rearrange the UI, make the UI bigger? Does it have the ability to have audio integration, or an audio narration of the menus so people who can't really see can still hear what they're doing? Things that AAA studios are putting into their games now. That's very objective. That is not a subjective thing. It's nowhere on here because you don't need any of that to have a masterpiece. I will say we can do a music break because here's the thing. There is no Orange Lounge Radio tonight. OLR is not going to be happening tonight. So if somebody, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and do a quick music break. If you want to call in and talk about something, head on over to our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord, and hop into the Green Room voice chat channel. It is open. And if somebody's in there at the end of the music break, we'll come in and we'll talk about some of this stuff. And if not, we'll just go ahead and end the show. But we're going to do a quick music break so people can get in. And if they want to chat about something, this is the time because it's going to be just us. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show and the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/vognetwork.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel. I'm Jennifer Hale, sometimes known as Commander Shepard, sometimes known as Basta Lashon, sometimes known as
Princess Marbox.
You're participating with the Bobby Black Wolf Show.
That's right. When OLR's not here, I play the Mass Effect bumper. I actually got that bumper at MomoCon, which is an anime convention here in Atlanta, which actually I went to yesterday. I was there yesterday for a day. Not officially, didn't take my camera or anything like that. Went and, saw some people and played some arcade games. Safe Point Arcade was there, brought their entire library of things. 3 2DX machines, a lot of stuff. So, yeah. And Breakman actually says, I'm really enjoying Little Kitty Big City, but now I want a more adult version. And Mike Def's like, yeah, it's called Stray. Stray is great. And Breakman says, I want to poop on things and kill birds. Stray Once again, I'm going to say Stray again. And Dark Tetsuya said the Bimani looked fun. Yes, and I played Drum Mania V7 at MomoCon, but they had the seat so far down it actually hurt my leg after a little bit. And yeah. Breakman says, I want to scratch my owner for not feeding me on time. Stray. Hi. Yes, you want to play Stray. There's also Cat Lateral Damage is another one. But Stray is really the game that you're looking for, I promise. Nobody is in the green room, so thank you. But, you know, every time, like, I get somebody in the green room and I talk too long, and so now I'm going to give people time to do that. Like I said, there is no Orange Lounge Radio tonight, so we are going to be going off the air, and I'll be raiding someone after the show. But thank you so much for being here. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly. Also, I'm on your social medias at Bobby Blackwolf or at BobbyBlackwolf.com. Over on Blue Sky. And that's where you can find my takes on things throughout the week. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But we would not be able to make this live show work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. You being here is really all we ask. But going above and beyond is really what really helps us keep things running. And we don't try to make money. We just would love to be able to pay the bills. So thank you so much, Orange Wright, for resubscribing, as well as Fifth Dream for resubscribing. So stay tuned. There will be a raid at the end. I will come back and we'll talk about the raid. And also maybe a little bit of Live Only Secret Club. Ooh, podcast audience, you'll learn what this is later, but not tonight. But maybe those who stick around after the credits will get to hear the Secret Club. So I'm going to go ahead and hit the button, and we'll talk next week, hopefully about some good stuff. That'd be nice. Anyway, enjoy Little Kitty Big City, Breakman. I'll see you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.